or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Interfacing complete. Please stand by. Now downloading Tech Talk Radio with Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ. Tech Talk Radio, it's technology you can understand. And now, here are Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ.
Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. I'm Dr. Richard Schertz.
And I'm Jim Russ.
And it's great to be back in the saddle again. I've been doing a little bit of traveling.
Globe hopping,
yes. I was in Hawaii for a while. Then I went to a class reunion. And while I was in Hawaii, I went up to the top of Mount Haleakala, and I saw the Air Force Observatory up there.
Oh, really?
That's where they track all the space objects there.
Oh, no kidding.
Because you're actually above the clouds, so they wouldn't let me in. I mean, I thought, well, should I try to jump? I got right up to the fence.
Right.
And I could look at all of the construction and all of the domes in there. But then I decided not to jump the fence after I saw this guy at the White House that jumped the fence and then they tackled him. I thought I wouldn't try that while I was there.
Wise move.
And while I was at my class reunion, I was just observing behavior. It's an interesting experience. I was curious as to how many people have iPhones, are they on Facebook, how do they use technology? And I would say about a third of my class was very technology literate, and about two-thirds of them were not so technology literate.
Uh-huh.
But Facebook was incredibly important to the folks at my reunion. I was really quite surprised. And they mostly used it to track their family. And it was really a big thing. So I can see that Facebook has transitioned from the young to the old. It is now, I think, yesterday's news as far as young people are concerned.
Yeah.
And it was, so everything there was all about Facebook and how to share things here. So there was a big discussion on how we're going to share photos for this thing. And so so I set up a Flickr site, which is free.
Yeah.
I mean, you could actually have Picasso, but I sort of like Flickr. So I set up a Flickr site, and then everybody's uploading pictures to the Flickr site. This is always the big conversation. And I wanted to set up a site where people could upload their own pictures because I did not want to be the primary picture uploader.
You got other things to do.
That's right. And so, and then it was, and there were, most people just took pictures with the iPhone or their cell phone. And there were a couple of folks that had digital cameras, really high-end digital cameras. And
uh-huh.
So they were, they were taking pictures, but most of them are just, iPhone.
Like iPhone pictures.
So it's pretty clear that there's been a real, shift in technology. Everybody did have a smartphone there in my class. So it was really a lot of fun to catch up with them. I did certainly enjoy that. And I'll tell you, a lot has happened the last couple of weeks. We had the iPhones released.
Yeah.
Six and 6 Plus, those have been out there, and we've been through all the Bendgate stuff,
mm-hmm.
Bendgate things, and so that's kind of interesting. And today we're going to feature the guy who is founder and CEO of GoPro. Have you heard of the GoPro?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
GoPro cameras.
Yeah.
It's not exactly IT, but so many people in IT use the GoPro.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, while I was out in Hawaii, I mean, everybody was using GoPros. And now the GoPro, they get the GoPro on a stick,
mm-hmm.
and then they do selfies. And so, I was out at a wedding there, and there was a guy at the boat, and he was holding it, and he was talking to it, and he was running around doing selfies. And so I saw a lot of people with GoPro cameras on sticks doing selfies. Actually, this is a selfie video. And they go around, and this has become quite the thing. It's not just for surfers, which is where it began. So I thought, okay, I'll feature Nick, the guy who started GoPro.
I've wondered about these things. I mean, I saw a GoPro picture yesterday of two people flying a little 2-seat airplane. I'm thinking, shouldn't you be more concentrating on the airplane right now than taking GoPro?
Well, see, when I did that tandem hang glide off that cliff in Nepal, The guy, the sort of expert that was actually with me.
You're hoping he was an expert.
I was hoping he had an expert. He had a GoPro on a stick.
Uh-huh.
And so he was taking GoPro as we were flying around up, you know, like at 3,000 or 4,000 feet up. He was there swinging this GoPro camera around, taking pictures, and then he was interviewing me. And so he would ask me questions, and I would answer them, and the GoPro would pick up the sound. So there was like I was sitting there at 4,000 feet, flying with the birds, conducting this interview. And, he did enjoy it, and then I got that on a DVD.
I want to blow the what you got coming up there. Is this your next toy, maybe?
It could be. It's possible. I don't have one yet, but it's getting close. And there's this big unpatchable USB flaw, which is a little bit of a problem. Mm-hmm. I'll talk about it. There's really no solutions to it, but it's out there. And AT&T got whacked for cramming. Talk about that, you know. And you can actually, if you already got an AT&T account, you probably get back some money from them.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the Nobel Prize for Physics was awarded, yes. So I have to talk about that blue light emitting diodes. And I'll talk briefly because I got a topic suggested by you about making your own mobile app.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll do that and a few other things. There's Kmart got breached and all sorts of. Seems like there's just security stuff every week.
We may need to just stick around for a second hour.
We just may have to. I mean, I'll have to probably push back. There's even a space elevator update. There was a breakthrough in carbon nanotube technology,
which, as we all know, is crucial to the space elevator.
I know, you know, we've talked about it so much, and I know all the Tech Talk audience just loves carbon nanotubes.
Well, I think you should save that for when David Byrd comes in.
I think, well, yeah, because he just really does like the space elevator.
He loves the space elevator.
And of course, it was a huge, huge mailbag.
Giant.
There's a letter in your mailbox.
And he's look at who's arrested, and he was right there on time.
He was. He's really on top. We got an email from Mary in Bethesda. Dear Dr. Schertz, a while back I had a conversation with a woman who runs this group, and I was considering getting involved, so she set up something for weekly meetings. And now I get these pop-up notices on my screen every time there's a weekly meeting. I don't want them anymore, and I don't know how to make them go away. Could you please help? Thanks, Mary in Bethesda. Well, Mary, she sent me a picture of it. It looks like actually a calendar notification of an upcoming meeting.
Mm-hmm.
So what I think happened when you were going to join this group, which was a weekly group, she sent you an invitation to the first group meeting. But then in that invitation, it said, this will be weekly. So when you accepted it, it put group meetings out forever on that particular day.
Oh, brother.
And so every Tuesday or whenever it is, this is going to pop up. So you've got to go to your calendar and make them go away. So you can pick one of them and you can delete it. And I don't know which machine you have, but it normally is going to say, do you want to delete just this one or the entire sequence of them? You'll have mm-hmm. that choice and just delete the entire sequence and they'll be gone. I don't think it's spam when I looked at it. It looked like a calendar notification. We got an email from Carl Tyler. Dear Dr. Schertz, I've been reading in the tech news about companies that are revoking trust in certificate authorities. I know there's plenty of articles on the internet about certificate authorities, but they're very technical and hard to understand. And you always have a way of explaining things that almost anybody can understand, which is why I listen to your podcast. Could you explain what the certificate authority is? Thanks, Carl Tyler. Okay, I'm going to have to talk about encrypted data communication. There is, in the beginning, there was what they called symmetric keys, symmetric encryption, where two people who wanted to talk each had the same encryption key, and they would encrypt it, and then they'd send the message, and they would use the same key to de-encrypt it. Now, this works fine if the person you're talking to lives next door. You can drive over and give them the key securely, and that's, you know, it's no problem.
Sure.
So symmetric encryption works beautifully if you can somehow communicate and coordinate the keys easily. But suppose that you're talking to a website, in Swahili, or in Swaziland. You're talking a website in Swaziland, and then you want to do an encryption. Well, now neither one of you've got to know what the key is. So you could take the Swaziland guy. You can say, "I'm going to send you my key, And then you can do, and then you could do some symmetric encryption. The problem is you have to send that key in an unencrypted way.
Uh-huh.
So there's no way to use symmetric encryption where both of you have the same key in a secure way in an internet environment where you're just dealing with a lot of different people. So they went to an asymmetric key method. And this is where there's a public key and a private key. So suppose I want to send an encrypted message to Swaziland. I will get the Swaziland public key. This would be, I'm sending it to the Swaziland Public Library. Okay. And so I would get the public key of the Swaziland Public Library that they've published to the internet. So I grab that public key. And then I take my private key and I use the combination of my private key and their public key to do an encryption. And they get this at the other end. Then they use my public key and their private key to de-encrypt it.
Uh-huh.
So they're the only ones who can de-encrypt it because only they have their private key. Now, everybody has my public key, of course, because I've shared it with the world, but only they have their private key. And so this is asymmetric communication because you got public and private keys. That's the basic idea behind it.
Okay.
And it was really a very clever idea, and a bunch of mathematicians figured out a way to do it, where if you don't have the private key, so like if somebody would intercept my encrypted message going to Swaziland Public Library, and they could get the Swaziland public key, and they could get my public key, but they could not get the Swaziland private key. Now, they have constructed this mathematically, so it's just impractical to try to crack that, you know, in a reasonable amount of time. Now, I guess if you had a powerful enough computer, you could do it without the private key, but it's just not practical, and so it becomes secure because it's impractical to crack it. It just would take too long and too much power.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the question is, if you've got the Swaziland Public Library public key, how do I know that that's really the Swaziland Public Library?
Ah.
See, that's the question.
Right.
So he's got his public key there. Shoot, I don't know. I mean, maybe it's actually the Swaziland Fire Department impersonating the Swaziland Library.
Because there's so much to be gained from that.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Maybe the firemen are trying to do something surreptitious with the books. I don't know. And so
set them on fire.
And so what happened is that people get a certificate that certifies their public key. So they will put up a public key certificate, and I'll go to the Swaziland Public Library. I'll pull down that certificate, and the certificate will tell me when it was authorized, who authorized it, and the expiration date. And embedded in the certificate is the public key. The public key is part of the certificate. But in addition, it has the public key for the certifying agency. So my computer can take the public key of the certifying agency. We can communicate to the certifying agency, hey, is this really the Swaziland Public Library? And then we certify it.
Mm-hmm.
You know how sometimes, and so your computers are set up, when they see a certificate, they'll certify it by setting up a secure communication with the certifying official. So that is the purpose of the certificate. And then if it's certified by the certifying authority, you say, okay, that is the Swaziland Public Library. Therefore, I can trust that public key, so I'm going to send them encrypted data. So that is the whole deal, and that's called the PKI, Public-Private Key Encryption System. I sort of had to explain it in a little bit, but it's a fairly simple idea. Now, Carl, you want to know why are they – now, you said they're revoking a lot of these things. Here's the problem. There are a lot of certificates that are being revoked right now, and here's why. Do you remember a while ago we had the Heartbleed bug? Do you remember that Heartbleed bug?
Yep, I do.
It turned out that in 17% of the cases, in 70% of all trusted secure socket layer cases, the Heartbleed bug revealed the private key of that server. Now, you can imagine if somebody gets the private key, they could take and impersonate you.
Mm-hmm.
They could impersonate a certificate, and because the public key is there, then you've got the private key. So they could actually impersonate that certificate once they had the private key. So all of a sudden, those compromised certificates where the private key was known really ought to be changed. And so the different organizations are revoking those certificates and requesting new certificates. That's what's going on here.
The private key is obviously the real key to
that
the whole
thing. That is the real key. So you could sort—I mean, if I'd want to use an analogy, suppose you had a mailbox at your apartment complex. The public key would be the mail slot. Everybody knows where that stinking mail slot is. The private key is the key that's on the back that allows you to open up the mailbox.
Mm-hmm.
So anybody can stuff mail in there, but only you can get at the real mail with your private key.
Exactly.
And of course, if you're the key to the mailbox were just public, and anybody could get the key to the mail, anybody come in and just take your mail.
Yep.
That'd be the problem. So then you'd have to change the key, and that would be the equivalent of revoking your certificate. So there you go. It's a little bit of a long explanation, but I think it's worth going through that encryption stuff every once in a while because it does come up a lot. Great email, Carl. We got an email from Lauren. Dear Dr. Schertz, I've got a hard decision, and I want to find out about a PC Mac hardware question. I'm signed up for a training class, and the instructor said I need to bring a laptop to the training, and it must have Internet Explorer. Now, I have an iMac, and it turns out Internet Explorer is not supported on the Mac. They stopped supporting Microsoft stopped supporting IE on the Mac quite a while ago. So what do you think my options are? Well, I would say your instructor is just sort of PC literate, and they really not so Mac literate. Safari is not a bad browser. But if in the event that they are very particular, I would download the Mac version of Chrome, because Chrome is really a robust browser.
Right.
It really supports all the standards extremely well. And in almost every case that I've had, if it worked in Internet Explorer, it would also work in Chrome.
What I don't get is why somebody who is teaching a class is still using Internet Explorer.
Yeah, because it,
that's like yesterday's news too, right?
It is. There are probably other. I mean, Chrome is a better
way
option,
better
is a better option.
Way better.
And but I think they're actually teaching a particular piece of software,
mm-hmm.
and I think the support only supports IE for whatever reason, and the instructor doesn't want to try to figure out anything different. So I would try to convince them to let you use Chrome. Now the other option, if you had to use Internet Explorer, you could actually emulate Windows in your Mac, and then you can install Internet Explorer there. But that's just a pain in the neck.
Yeah.
I mean, you could do that. You could set up a virtual machine. You can install Internet Explorer. That would be a possibility. But I'd try to convince your instructor to use Chrome.
It's a lot of work.
We got an email from Mary Wilson. Dear Dr. Schertz, I've been using several different Gmail accounts for over 2 years, and I usually access them via my Apple Mail. Apple Mail is just a mail app. It actually consolidates all your different email accounts into one application, so it's easy to manage all your email. And I also look at them through Internet Chrome browser. Today I needed to find a sent message. I never found it at either place. It's about 2 weeks old. I don't know if my Gmail settings are correct. I tried, and of course, to figure this out, but it seems it may involve the POP IMAP settings. I really don't understand it. You could spend some time on this. This is the very most important setting for Gmail. I need to know this. I'm very upset that I don't have a copy of my emails. I sent them over the past... I've sent them over the past several months, and this, I've never run into this before. I guess this stuff happens at Google's end. Well, I've actually never lost an email with Gmail. I mean, it could be the way that you've got your mail client configured. You know, there are two configurations. You've got POP and IMAP. Those are the two configurations. POP is Post Office Protocol. And IMAP and Post Office Protocol, POP, actually downloads the emails to your computer. And when you download the emails to your computer, you can choose whether you delete them from the server or leave them on the server. You could have a choice there. But IMAP is actually a much better way to do it. You're actually using essentially a web interface, and you're looking at the email client directly. And if you delete an email in IMAP, it's just... It's deleted, and you're not worried about downloading to multiple computers. You see, suppose you've got two computers and you're running POP, you you download all the emails to computer one. Suppose you leave them on the server. Then you go to computer two. You download all the emails. Again, you got to delete all the spam. It's a lot easier if you just got IMAP, because then once you clean up your spam, you're set. So I always configure email to work with IMAP, which is a much better way to do that. In fact, Google recommends that you configure it with IMAP. So what you want to do on your Gmail account, there's that little gear up there on the right side. This is the sort of the settings. Click on that gear, and you click on that. And then what you want to do there is there are tabs. That'll open up a lot of settings, and there are tabs across here. And there's one tab called Forward and Pop IMAP. And so you click on the Forward and Pop IMAP, and then you scroll down a little bit, and there's a button there that says Enable IMAP. You just click on Enable IMAP. And then when you configure your mail application for Gmail within the mail applications, you can choose you have to choose the IMAP option. So that is really what I would suggest. As to your emails disappearing, sometimes when you are going into your email account, you sort of move a folder. I mean, I've grabbed a folder and I put it into another folder. So maybe you took all your sent mail and put it into another folder. Maybe so I'd look around for maybe your folders being a folder inside of a folder. Because I just can't imagine that Gmail lost any of your email accounts. So I'd check around for maybe a missing folder, which is inside of another folder. That's happened to me on occasion, and when I discover it, I get it back again. Oh, by the way, when you configure your mail application and you choose the mail IMAP option for account type, you want for your incoming server, you want to use imap.gmail.com. That would be how you do that. We got an email from Thomas Medford. Would the good doctor please discuss the physics and principles behind the EM, or microwave drive, for long-distance space flight? And have the results been reported by other researchers? Thanks, Thomas Medford.
Does this tie in at all to the space elevator?
No, this has got nothing to do with space elevator, but if it has to do with space, I'm very happy to talk
yes,
about it.
Yes, of course.
Well, this is a very controversial propulsion technique because it violates conservation of momentum. And physicists just hate that. Now, it's based on a microwave field generated by a magnetron, and it's injected into a resonant cavity, and it's tuned up so the cavity resonates. Now, the cavity is shaped like a trapezoid, and the energy is going back and forth from the small side of the trapezoid to the large side of the trapezoid, and as it bounces back and forth, the theory says differences in radiation pressure provide the thrust. So like one end is pushed less, the small end is pushed less than the large end. And so you get radiation pressure due to the differences in pressure at the two ends. But, you know, conservation of momentum would say, well, that's not going to really work. But the guy who invented it actually did a measurement, and he showed some thrust in his measurements. So NASA actually tested the thruster. There was a Chinese group that tested it, and they actually showed that it worked too, but the Americans just don't trust the Chinese. So NASA did it, and just a couple of months ago they tested this thruster, and actually they did measure some thrust, and they turned it around and they double checked it because they were highly skeptical. So now they're thinking maybe the radiation is somehow interacting with quantum particles that come and go in a vacuum. So the theory is still out on this thing, but actually there has been some experimental verification. And the beauty of this is that if it works, you can actually just have electrical energy generate thrust without fuel, which means you could have solar panels providing just what you need to provide the thrust. And this could be a game changer for space travel.
Yeah, sure.
But it's one of these things that people are highly skeptical about, but they... Just 2 months ago, NASA got a positive result. So now they're saying, okay, maybe there's something in this thing we don't really understand. So now the jury's out, the theory's not complete, and when I get more information on it, I'll get back to you on that. But that was a good question.
Let me ask you this. Does that have any applications on Earth in terms of propulsion for vehicles on Earth, maybe?
It's a pretty small thrust.
Uh-huh.
And see, that's...
Oh, so it works in zero gravity.
It works in zero gravity. And if you have a small thrust for a long time, you can build up to a great speeds. Mm-hmm. But it really wouldn't work much in the on the Earth. We got an email from Mary Wilson. Dear Dr. Schertz, based on you having said good stuff about UMA a while back, I signed up for this voiceover IP about a month ago and have had a ton of troubles.
Uh-oh. Way to go, Doc.
People, when I call people, they only hear every other word of what I say. I wanted them to change my caller ID and to only show my phone number and not my name. They told me this could not be done. I called back, and they said they could do it, but it had to put two letters where the name usually goes. This is what was done. So I called a friend and asked what the caller ID should read, and he said it read a formal Google Voice number, which wasn't even working. I have no idea how Uman got that number, and I can't talk to anybody. So what's going on? Okay, well, Mary, first of all, I still do have UMA, and I love it. And it has just been trouble-free. I actually have two phone numbers. I've got one for my fax and one for my main phone. And I set it up in about 15 minutes and haven't touched it since. Now, if you are having trouble with somebody understanding your talking, when you're talking to them, that's actually the upload side of your bandwidth connection. So if you have low bandwidth or you got a bandwidth issue, voice over IP doesn't work so well. So I'm thinking that your upload speed is low. That's what I'm thinking. So I think you should actually check that. I would go to broadbandnetworks.com, check your connection speeds to see if they can hear you properly. As for your name appearing, maybe when you called your friend, he had your account in his contacts, and he was showing up some other information that was being pulled out of his contact list. That's all I can imagine there. But I really don't have any trouble with this thing. And you didn't really tell me what sort of bandwidth you have. I'm using Fios, and which is certainly good enough. So I would keep on trying. Maybe you could email back with me after you do this, broadbandnetworks.com. Check your upload and download speed. Email back what that data is, and then we could talk about it further next week. But that was a great email. Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot, Mary, for that email.
Okay.
Hey, Doc, you sound different here. You have a couple of weeks off, and you come in here, and you sound beat down. What's going on here?
I'm not.
No.
I'm kind of beat I'm down. Actually, hey, Jimbo, are you with me on this?
I've been in Hawaii.
I missed it? We've talked physics. We're going to talk space elevator later.
Oh, I was hoping I didn't miss that.
Listen,
there was a big breakthrough in the space elevator business.
Yeah. Can you just hold that for the best of, Doc, because I got something I want to talk to you about.
Oh,
right,
okay.
Now. These Google users want to be forgotten with Google. They're begging them to just erase them.
Yeah,
Google.
I know. That is
a lot of people are starting to do that. Why do you think that is?
Because people don't like some of the things in their past showing up. Maybe they committed a crime.
You're going that way with this, huh?
So maybe they committed a crime and they don't.
Oh, come on, Doc. Stop. Jim, don't let them do this.
They don't like Google.
Wait a minute. Wait. Their crime was posting on Google. That was their crime. Because I think everybody knows too much about everybody now.
Yeah,
because of Facebook,
course, right.
and Google and mm-hmm. blah, blah, blah. I don't even do Facebook anymore.
So this right to be forgotten, this was a European Union law.
Oh.
See, it's not
they passed that in Europe?
Yes.
Oh, I love those people.
See, they passed.
I'm gonna move over there.
See,
hey, easy now.
What they did, they passed a right to be forgotten law in Europe, mm-hmm. and Google has now received like 1,000 or like 1 million requests.
Yeah, please.
For the right to be forgotten.
Wipe me out.
But here's the problem. Most of the requests are people like a politician who's committed a crime,
man, can't do that.
and he doesn't want the crime showing up on Google.
Well, how do you get rid of that?
Or it could be like a pedophile teacher doesn't want that showing up on Google.
Well, yeah, I got that one. How about those normal people who don't? We lead boring lives until somebody finds us on
Google.
Facebook.
In the case, if you are from the European Union, right. and if you're not trying to hide a a crime or certain right. bad behavior, yeah. and you just want something to be forgotten, some stupid thing like a drinking bout.
I don't think
Google.
I think you're going to be okay, Doc.
Google will allow that, and they wow. are approving. They are approving about 40% of the right to be forgotten
this guy
requests.
On Chardonnay. You just don't want to be around on Chardonnay.
That's going to make the best of.
That is the best of right there. Uh-huh. Exactly. Doc, we're just talking about plain old Joe and Joette here. You know, just wipe us out.
But they won't do it if you're in the U.S. They only do it in the European Union. That's the only place where the law exists.
I don't trust any of these guys anymore.
How can you actually do this?
Yeah, how can you do that?
Is it possible to wipe somebody out?
What they do is they just make it so it doesn't show up in the search results. It's still there.
Yeah.
It's still there.
It never goes away. I mean,
it doesn't go away, but it just doesn't show up in the Google search results.
Well, then you just go to Bing or some other search engine and find these people, right? Right?
Yeah, but see, Bing is also going to have the same right to be forgotten law.
Well, they all
feed off
each other anyway, don't they?
Yeah. So you can still find it. But I'll tell you, the people that are really teed off about it are the newspapers, because what's happening is they're blocking. They want news articles blocked. Of crimes and stuff.
Yeah.
And so here is the ethical dilemma. Okay, so Google has a million of these. And you have to decide, is some guy trying to hide something that the public has a right to know?
Right.
Or is he trying to just hide some stupid stuff?
Joe Schmo? I don't want anybody knowing where I live or what's my phone number
or
all
Google,
that kind of stuff.
So Google, though, they get a million requests and they have this ethical dilemma. And so they've got to actually staff it. Right. They got to look at each one of these and make a decision. So now they've created this big board. They hired an ethics guy who chairs the board, and they've got a whole big effort to evaluate all these requests to be forgotten.
We're going to court in the 21st century, the court of Facebook. Yeah,
and so it has turned out to be a nightmare for Google. And Google is saying, why should we be the ones who are trying to legislate what should be forgotten or not be forgotten? I mean, here Google is in Silicon Valley, and they're making decisions for the European Union right. as to whether some guy's crime should be hidden or not.
And this is clearly it costs Google money, and it costs them a lot of money, right?
It costs Google a lot of money, and so they were fighting it.
So will Bing and all the other ones have to do this same thing?
Yeah, they will. Like all the search engines are going to have to do the same thing in the European Union. Now, that's the only place where they have to do it. That law does not exist anywhere else.
Doc, you remember about 15 years ago, you first mentioned the word Google to me, and it sounded like SpaghettiOs.
Yes.
At the time.
Mm-hmm.
What's the new hot search engine right now?
It's still Google.
Still Google.
Yeah.
So nobody's come out with something else. That's
mm-hmm.
it.
Mm-hmm.
We're done.
It's done. Well, there are search engine wannabes, but they just don't compete with Google.
I have a piece of paper I brought from upstairs. Somebody asked me, did you enjoy the nude beaches where you went?
Did you enjoy the nude beaches?
Somebody asked.
I didn't really know there were any nude beaches in Hawaii. I'm just totally
shocked.
I am totally shocked.
Listen to him.
I had no idea.
He thinks I'm saying hi.
I think we should Google this and find the pictures.
Let's see if we got pictures.
Of him on
Google images. Yeah.
No, I don't think that's an image we want that.
You're in Hawaii? Yeah. Really?
But I was in Hawaii. I was doing scuba diving. Maui and Oahu.
I haven't been to Hawaii. I have been to Oahu. Yeah. It's like the New York of the Pacific.
I mean, Oahu. I don't like Oahu. I like Maui. And I was doing, I went over to Lanai.
Jim's over here. Going great, man. I'm going to Disney World.
I've been to Chicago.
I was diving the caverns. These are these lava tubes underwater.
I'm not doing that one.
No, because when
lava tubes.
I don't do tubes.
The islands formed, you know, lava came down, when it hit the water, it hardened on the outside, then the middle dropped out, and so underwater it looks like a bunch of lava spaghetti.
Yeah,
and you go down there, and you can dive. In through these lava tubes.
Stop the story right
here. I was down in the lava tubes.
You're making David claustrophobic.
Stop the story. Here's the problem I have with the lava tubes. It's what went down there to live in the lava tubes, that I don't want to be in there.
Nothing bothers a diver.
You obviously haven't been diving with me. I got a rule: if it's bigger than I am and I'm in the water, I'm getting out of the water.
Yeah, but yeah. Dave, I, you know, like I don't carry a raw steak with me when I'm down.
Well, that's right. You are the raw steak.
Okay, jeez. Man, I'm telling you, too many Sea Hunt episodes.
Who was that guy that used to wrestle the alligators and?
Oh, that's Steve. What's his face?
Yeah, I forgot his last name. Yeah,
Steve Irwin.
Steve Irwin. He had that battle with the stingray.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it worked out real well for him.
Oh no, it's crazy.
You know, somebody shot down a drone. You heard that?
Yeah.
Some guy shot down a drone with a shotgun.
Yeah.
He's arrested.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I don't want anybody shooting down my drone.
Well, you live in Virginia, so I just say that?
Doc, I have to leave you shortly because I do have another job. Any other scoop I'm going to miss before I leave?
No.
Space elevator.
I think that's it.
Carbon fiber.
You've been gone how long now? 3 weeks?
I've been gone three.
And this is your A game?
Okay.
You don't know?
Here's the deal. There is this thing about this unpatchable USB flaw. This is a big problem.
At the glazed look on David's face, I'm thinking he's not.
No, Dave.
Kmart got hacked, David.
Dave, this is a big problem because somebody found a flaw. You got these thumb drives that stick in your computer.
Absolutely.
They found a flaw in the actual firmware of the USB port.
Of the socket that the thumb goes into.
Yeah, of the socket, which makes you able to take over the machine with malware.
Really?
And there's nothing they can do about it unless they upgrade the firmware.
Oh.
And the firmware conforms to the USB standard, so they have to change the standard. So it is actually, there's going to be a time of a few months where you just don't want to stick a USB from unknown sources into your computer.
I believe in safe USB in there, Doc.
Careful that, you know, there's a lot
I'm
of stuff.
I'm done. I'm halfway out the door.
Because
I'm sorry you're going to miss space elevator. We really wanted you here.
I'm going to miss that, too.
I might put the space elevator off till next week.
Don't threaten us, Doc.
Because,
hey, Doc, welcome back, buddy. We missed you.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to be back. I went to also went to my class reunion.
Oh, wow.
And you know what I discovered?
How many people are left?
Well, okay.
Although I need to be a little more tender about that.
Yeah,
everybody was there?
No, okay. Let's put it this way.
Let's start with 80, the M's. Okay.
85% of us are still around.
Oh, good. Okay. Okay.
This is Midwest, man. They live clean
forever.
Out there.
You Kansas kids live to like 150.
There's no drinking bouts out there.
No, there's no drinking bouts.
No, there's no alcohol. We don't even know what alcohol is out there.
No, not at all.
No, you're making your own. That's why you don't.
That's right.
Doc, I have to leave now. Hey, Jimbo, thanks, buddy.
Hey, David. Nice seeing you. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome home.
I'll see you later, David.
Alrighty.
This is Tech Talk Radio on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM, HD2. Stand by. We'll be right back.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
What's the latest innovation in IT degrees? It's the Stratford University innovative approach that turns marketable skills into an employable edge to get you hired faster in today's hottest fields like cybersecurity, data mining, and mobile networking. At Stratford, our IT instructors bring their own business world experience right into the classroom with real-world problem-solving projects structured like a real business, empowering you with real hands-on skills so you can hit the ground running doing exactly what you learn in the classroom, right in the workplace. It's all part of our proven learn by doing approach to IT. Every class, every degree, every day. We offer bachelor's, master's, and associate degree programs at our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner, Woodbridge, and Alexandria. Contact us today at stratford.edu or give us a call at 800-444-0804. Stratford University. Changing lives, one student at a time.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We're in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. And now it is time for
Profiles in IT.
Yes, today we're going to feature Nicholas D. Woodman. That's what his mother called him, Nicholas D. Woodman. His friends called him Nick. He's founder and CEO of GoPro. Nicholas D. Woodman was born June 24, 1975, in Santa Clara County, California. He grew up in Menlo Park and Atherton, California, and attended the Menlo School. Nick began surfing his senior year of high school. He dropped all of his sports. He focused on catching the waves. I think his grades might have dropped a bit.
Probably.
Every morning he got up at 6 a.m., headed for the beach, and just surfed. He formed Menlo School's first surf club before graduating in 1993. And, you know, he even made up T-shirts. He even made T-shirts, surfing club T-shirts, that he sold at the school football games in order to raise money for the surf club. He earned a Bachelor of Arts degree in Visual Arts at the University of California, San Diego in 1997. And after graduation, he founded a marketing company called Funbug.
Mm-hmm.
But it failed. It was a failure. And so in 2002,
I'm just laughing at the way you said that.
In 2000, he just fed up with the whole. It was, you see, this was right around the dot-com crash. Okay,
mm-hmm.
See, he graduated in 1997. Remember, the dot-com crash was 1999. So he started this dot-com marketing fun bug thing around the big hype, and when the bubble burst, there was no fun in Funbug.
It was defunbug.
That's right. So after the big bust, he was just fed up with the whole tech scene in Silicon Valley. And at age 26 in 2002, he decided just to go on a world surfing trip. So he just left home and just went around, surfed for 5 months. He just said, to heck with this whole deal. He went surfing in Australia and Indonesia. And he wanted to kind of show people what a great surfer he was, you know. I mean, if you can't really show your stuff,
then what's the point?
Nobody knows.
Right.
So he said, so he wanted to, like, you know, so he said he had a 35-millimeter film camera.
And so he
put
water.
So he put it in a waterproof case, and then he attached it to the palm of his hand. I mean, this is a little awkward. So he was there attached to the palm of a hand. And he basically used surfboard leashes and rubber bands to hold it onto his hand. And while he was surfing, he would hold out his hand and try to take pictures of the waves. I could see where this would not be the perfect way to get pictures.
Doesn't sound like it.
But it kind of like began. And then he basically then talked to other surfers as he was surfing in Australia and Indonesia, and everybody was trying to get pictures of them surfing the big wave. And he said, you know, there could be a possible business here. And all of the surfers were all trying to get better and better and better, and they all wanted to become professionals. They all wanted to go pro, as they say. So that became the inspiration for the name of the camera, GoPro, because all the surfers wanted to go pro. Now, Dean Woodman was his father, and his father was also a Silicon Valley investment banker. I mean, Dean finally came back after surfing for 5 months, and his dad said, and mom, Dean, or Nick, we're really glad you're back. What are you going to do now? And he says, well, I'm thinking I'm going to start this company to make cameras for surf people. So his dad was an investment banker, and he gave his son $200,000 checks in the early days as kind of startup money.
Would Dean Woodman like another son?
Yeah, I think he. Well, I don't know if he even wants another son. I think one son's enough. One surfer's enough.
Well, I'm just thinking about the check. That's all.
Yeah. Oh, the check.
Mm-hmm.
Now maybe you could propose some kind of radio thing with him. I don't know, but he gave his son $200,000 checks, and then Nick put in $30,000 of his own money. See, what he did when he was in Indonesia, he found these necklaces that he bought for $1.90 in Indonesia, and then he sold them on the California beaches like for $10.
Right.
He and his girlfriend went up and down the beaches selling these necklaces for $10 that he bought for $1.90, and he had this little van, and they go up and down selling it to people on the beaches, and he actually made around $30,000.
That's
doing
incredible.
That. So he took he took this nest egg from selling these necklaces, and he put it in. And his mom even threw in $35,000, you know. So he worked over his dad, and then he worked over his mom, you know. And his mom, He put in $35,000. He debuted his first camera called the GoPro 35mm Hero in September 2004. It was actually a film camera.
Mm-hmm.
And he debuted it at the 2004 San Diego Action Sports Retailers Trade Show, which I've never heard of. And his first big sale, he sold 100 cameras to a Japanese firm. At the end of the debut year, he'd sold $150,000 worth of product. Now, most of these cameras were sold to surf shops and specialty sports retailers. Now, Woodsman took, Nick took his, he went out then, once he started selling, he started making trade show trips all around. And he made trade show trips in that same Volkswagen bus, the 1971 Volkswagen bus. He'd sleep in the van at night when he was going around doing the trade show things. And he called the Volkswagen bus the Biscuit. So he drove the Biscuit all over the place, you know, trying to sell this GoPro camera. In 2004, he hired his college buddy and roommate, Dana,
mm-hmm.
to run sales at GoPro. Then Woodman and Dana, in 2005, the next year, took in $350,000 in sales. So
which is basically the seed money right there.
Yeah, so I mean, the first year he took in $150,000, the next year he took in $350,000. So he was off to a pretty good start. But then he realized, you know, this is bigger than just surfer. You know, you got people like do mountain biking and skiing and, and hang gliding that would like to, like to document what they're doing. And so then he decided to expand it to other verticals, and he started going out and selling it to biking shops and skiing shops, and sales began to grow. In 2006, he went digital. This was a big thing. And he came up with the first digital Hero, and it included 10 seconds of video. And this was actually a key factor, the 10 seconds of video, because people really liked the video. In 2006, revenues were up to $800,000, and by 2007, they were $3.4 million. So adding on digital and video made a big difference.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the products have since evolved to include a compact digital camera that supports Wi-Fi, can be remotely controlled, has waterproof housing, records to an SD card, and is affordable. It's like $200 to
$400. Yeah, right. I'm looking at the website. The Hero goes for $130.
Yeah,
the entry level.
So he really made it, a camera like he wanted when he was surfing. Now, sales thereafter doubled each year, and in 2012, GoPro sold 2.3 million cameras.
Hmm.
In December 2012, the Taiwanese contract manufacturer Foxconn, now these are the guys that manufacture the iPhone in China, Foxconn purchased 8.8% of GoPro
mm-hmm.
for $200 million,
jeez,
which set the market cap for the company at $2.25 billion. Now, Woodman still owns the majority share of the company because he only got his dad put in some money and his mom, and so he had it all. Now, he's married to Jill. Jill was, of course, in the van with him selling all his necklaces.
Mm-hmm.
And Jill was actually the third employee of GoPro. They have two children. They live in Woodside, California. Now, Woodman is known as the mad billionaire because he's got this unconventional behavior and eccentricities. I mean, he doesn't act like a billionaire. He's just still a surfer boy.
Uh-huh.
So they call him the mad billionaire there in Woodside, California. In 2014, his net worth is $4.8 billion.
That's incredible.
So there you go. Nick D. Woodman, as mother called him, the founder and CEO of GoPro.
Well, I hope you're paying attention because in just a minute, we're going to ask you a question based on our Profiles in IT segment today, and it will land you some free food. So stand by for the pop quiz here on Tech Talk Radio, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 1077 FM, HD2.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment. Change your life. Put your talents out there on your terms. Get full credit for your ideas and hard work, and set your own pay.
If you're ready to be your own CEO, Stratford University's life-changing Masters in Entrepreneurial Management program can show you how to develop and launch your business. From writing a solid business plan to financing, legal issues, staffing, even branding and marketing. Let Stratford show you the ropes and walk you over the pitfalls of running your own business. Choose from online or in-classroom courses at our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner, Woodbridge, and Alexandria. Change your life. Take charge of your future on your own terms. Contact us today at stratford.edu or give us a call at 800-444-0804. That's 800-444-0804. Stratford University. Changing lives, one student at a time.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
It's time for Washington's most popular and longest-running radio game show, the Stratford University Pop Quiz. Now, here's your host and star of our show. No, it's not Gene Rayburn. It's not Alex Trebek. It's not Richard Dawson. It's Dr. Richard Schertz.
Welcome back to the classroom of the airwaves.
And David said you kind of sounded beaten down. Were those the words? You're not beaten down.
Beaten down. I know. Maybe it's my Hawaiian look now that I'm back.
You look kind of. That's it. It's the Hawaiian shirt, the sarong.
That's right. It could be.
You look in the tan.
I think that could be it.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
anyway,
when there's a classroom of the airways, we of course must have an assessment, which is our pop quiz. If you get the correct answer to the pop quiz, you'll get two tickets to fine dining at the Escoffier Dining Room at the Karem Dining Room. And you will also get an A-plus for this class session. Now, earlier in the show, I was talking about Nick D. Woodman, the founder and CEO of GoPro. While he was starting his company, he did his initial sales, trade shows, and sales using his 1971 Volkswagen bus. What was the nickname of that 1971 Volkswagen bus?
Well, if you know the answer to that question, you need to get it to us right now by dialing these following digits in the proper number. If you're calling from west of Menlo Park, California, it's 877-936-9333. From Oahu, Hawaii, it's 877-936-9333. And, of course, the wild card line is 877-936-9333. Or...
And if you're calling in from Swaziland Public Library, you can use Skype. Simply connect to us by connect to Tech Talk Radio 1, and your call will be forwarded directly to the studio.
You're from Swaziland.
I know. I like Swaziland.
I know you do.
So this unpatchable USB flaw, let me go back. I briefly mentioned this to David, but he just had no interest in it. Now, this is computer code that can turn almost any device that connects via USB-A into a cyber attack platform. The computer security researchers who wrote the code that actually follows the discovery of the USB flaw earlier this year. Now, this pair made the code public just in the last couple of weeks, even though there are no patches for it, because they wanted to urge the manufacturers and the standard makers to fix it. The details of the – they call it the bad USB flaw. The bad USB flaw were released at the Black Hat Computer Security Conference in August by Karsten Noel and Jacob Lell. Their work showed how to exploit flaws in the software that help devices connect computers via USB. The biggest problem they discovered was that the firmware, which was found in these devices, and this firmware actually needs to be patched. There's no software fix for this. Now, two cybersecurity researchers found a way to subvert this and install an attack code. So at the Black Hat conference, this pair demonstrated with using a smartphone and a USB stick that they could steal data when it was plugged into the target machine. So you just plug it into the machine and people could steal your data using this particular patch. Now, they didn't release the code because they wanted to give firms a chance to fix it, But two other researchers, Adam Caudill and Brandon Wilson, wrote their own code, and they released it at the DerbyCon hacker conference. So now the code's out there. Anybody can use it. And so now we are hoping that the USB manufacturers and standard makers, standards group, actually accelerate the fix to this. So the warning is, beware of rogue USB devices, and don't, you know, all, you know, these USB devices that people give away at conferences, I just, at this point, I just forget them. Mm-hmm. Don't stick them in your computer.
Okay, time is a-wasting here. Let's go to line one. This is Dan, who's checking in this morning. Dan, thank you for calling. Where are you calling from, sir? Whoops. Helps if I do this. Hi, Dan. Dan?
Hey, Middleburg, Virginia.
Middleburg. Good morning, sir. Dr. Schertz, please ask the question.
Yes, we were talking about Nick Woodman, founder and CEO of GoPro. What was the name of that 1971 Volkswagen bus that he used to make his marketing trips in?
He was driving around California in the Biscuit.
That is correct.
Yes, sir.
Very good.
Dan,
very good.
Very good. You're the winner. Thank you for calling. Thanks for listening. Thank you for that. And please stand by. Andrew Mitchell will be right with you. Doc, we are kind of running out of time here, but we have a couple of minutes if we could
cover something else, please. Let's do the AT&T cramming settlement. Mm-hmm. I think this is about a good two-minute segment.
Okay.
Ongoing efforts by the FTC and the federal and state and its federal and state partners to stop mobile cramming resulted in a $105 million settlement with AT&T. This is the biggest to date. And AT&T customers may be available for a refund. According to FTC, AT&T Mobility charged customers mobile phone bills for third-party subscriptions or services they never ordered. Many consumers were unaware that they were paying for this, and it was up to like $9.99 per month for like random horoscope text messages, flirting tips, celebrity gossip, wallpaper, ringtones, whatever it was. Now the problem is that the billing was actually masked on their system. According to the FTC, AT&T didn't make it easy to figure it out. The phone bills that they sent to consumers were deceptive because the company lumped all these charges together and made it look like it was related to AT&T's mobile phone services.
Wow.
And, of course, AT&T got 30% of all of those charges. So they said, well, okay, we're making money on the deal. So now when a customer saw an overall balance due, the hidden charges were hard to figure out. They like couldn't tell that they were paying for a ringtone. And so now the AT&T has been required to pay that back. So I would recommend that you call AT&T and ask about any unauthorized charges to your account. They have to check on it, and they have to refund those unauthorized billings. You can also go to ftc.gov/AT&T to get the full item on this thing. If you're unsure if you're eligible for a refund, call the FTC Refund Contractor at 1-877-819-9692 for more information. So that's, you know, what this cramming is. People mm-hmm. will, a third party will just simply tell AT&T, these people contracted for this, and AT&T will just put it on the bill even though you didn't do it. And that's called cramming the bill.
Some of the things, actually, and I suspect it's not covered, there are things that you may have signed up for that you get a text message on your phone that you've been billed for. I guess that would not apply to this, right, because you were notified.
Yeah, that would not apply. But mm-hmm. then you see some of these text messages, you end up with, you may just inadvertently say yes, not even know that you're signing up for a ringtone mm-hmm. and be billed for it $9.99 every single month. So AT&T had no notification methods. And they also masked the billings on the bill. So even if you looked at the bill, people that were vigilant looking at their bill couldn't find it. So the thing was hidden so much. That was the FTT finding. Listen, the show just flew by. We love your emails. Email us at techtalk@stratford.edu. We also want you to go to check out Stratford University at stratford.edu and tell them that you heard about the programs on Tech Talk Radio.
Thank you for listening. If you missed the show or would like to hear it again in its entirety, it'll replay at 7 o'clock tomorrow evening. See you next week.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWT-FM HD2 Manassas. This is Federal News Radio on the air at 1500. 1400 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. The Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, American University Eagles, Washington Nationals, and the Washington Capitals. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
We have Navy football on the air this afternoon, beginning at 2 with the pregame show, Navy VMI, kickoff at 3:30. And then tonight, it is the Caps and the Boston Bruins at the Garden in Boston. You hear the pregame at 6:45, and the puck drops at 7. It's going to be cloudy, rainy today. Highs going up to around 60. 52 outside our studio right now. It is 10 a.m.